put safety first with Danger Tate.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate. I'm Tate, and this is my interview series where I talk to really cool people about the cool things that they do. So our guest today is one of the most renowned river conservationists, photographer, and speakers in the industry. He did van life before van life was the thing, and he's written over 30 books with five more on the way, all about the topic of conservation, rivers, and all of that stuff. So our guest today is Tim Palmer, and we're going to bring him to the stage.
Thank you, Tate. Thank you for that whopper of an introduction. I hope I can live up to that.
Well, and the best news is we barely scratched the surface.
And you know, it's just really great to see you. I don't think I have ever seen you not on a river.
No, true. Yeah. So we met on that Tilly Walton trip on the Rogue then ran into each other last time again on the Rogue.
Yeah.
Okay. How many times have you done the Rogue River?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, it's embarrassing. I don't know, Tate. But it's not a tremendous amount. It's like 20 or 30.
20 or 30.
Yeah.
No, you think only 20? Well, I guess you do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, river guides do that many in a week. But yeah. Here I am. It's the next river south of me. Uh-huh. But it's still like 4.5 hours to the put in.
Yeah, fair.
It's not like I just go and do this thing.
Yeah.
Well, but Anne and I do, we do a trip usually once a year.
Okay, yeah, that's
wonderful. You know, my first trip on the Rogue was 1977.
Wow.
So that, you know, I haven't done a whole lot of them, but I have done trips going back to then.
What was your first river ever?
Oh, wow. So that would have to be the Salmon River in Idaho.
The Middle Fork or?
No, the main stem.
Okay.
And it was a really weird trip. I was in college. I was a landscape architecture student at Penn State.
Wonderful. Shout out Penn State.
And I got a great summer job in Sawtooth National Forest, working for the Forest Service as a seasonal landscape architect. And it turned out that the horse packer at our work base had an old canvas army surplus raft.
Okay.
And he let me borrow that.
Did it have oars or a frame or anything?
No.
Okay, just the raft.
Just two paddles.
Great.
So my boss and I said, well, we're going to take this down the Salmon River. And so we hauled it down to the river below 4th of July Creek where we worked and put it in and floated. And we had heard that we shouldn't have any big problems except watch out for Sunbeam Dam.
Okay.
And maybe many of your viewers know that Sunbeam Dam was the only dam on the Salmon River. It was blasted away in the 1930s, but a lot of stuff remains.
Oh, like the rebar and stuff like that? Okay.
Like cement and some really scary rebar. But all we were told was, watch out for it. So we thought, no problem, we'll watch out for it.
But you didn't know how to read water, or you did at that point?
No. First river trip.
Okay, great.
So we were watching, you know, no one told us to scout it or even, we didn't even know really where it was.
Uh-huh.
And then we saw it ahead of us and, you know, just fat, dumb, and happy we made it through.
I feel like that's like the perfect example of ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, yeah.
Because let's say like, I mean, you've done, how many rivers have you done?
Oh, probably trips on 400 different rivers.
Okay. You are the goal. You are who I want to be. I want to do that many rivers. That's incredible. But if someone came to you now and said, hey, I think I'm just like, I got this boat. I'm just going to go run this river. No idea what I'm doing. Would you be like, yeah, that's a great idea. You should definitely do that.
No, I'd say you're totally out of your mind. and I know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so, and you've, when you're looking at a river that you want to run, are you looking at like first descent or what initially draws you to the river?
Oh, man. Well, a lot of things, Tate. I mean,
good answer. Yeah.
I mean, number one, any river.
Uh-huh.
I love to do all rivers.
Yeah.
You know, I did a 530-mile trip on the Yellowstone, and none of it was really big whitewater. Whitewater is not my main thing, but I love whitewater.
Yeah.
I love long trips. We can get into that later if you want.
I'd love that. Wonderful
things. A lot of the time I'm working.
Okay.
I have written, let me see if you can see the books back there on that shelf.
Yeah.
I've written 30 books, and many of them are about rivers.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got one of yours on my desk right now or at home.
Only one?
don't call me out like that, Tim. Okay. I'll go on Amazon right after this. I'll order them all.
I need to send you a book or two.
Okay. That sounds great.
But anyway, so I'm often working, you know, like learning.
Yeah.
And so I go there to be there and see the place and experience it and do it all. So that means, you know, a lot of rivers are chosen for that reason. I'm a big believer in doing the rivers near you.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just start go driving everywhere forever, you know, all over the globe. So the Elk River is my local river right here. And, you know, so that's a favorite of mine. The Rogue, of course, is a favorite. It's close. So, you know, there are all kinds of reasons I go and run rivers.
When you're looking or like in order to find the river, are you just driving and you're like, oh, I could run that? Or are you using Google Maps or how do you do it?
Well, I don't use Google Maps.
Okay.
And I have picked rivers just because they looked good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like driving to Alaska one year. You know, I cross a bridge in BC and say, oh, my gosh, this looks great. You know, and there's another bridge only 5 miles away, and I don't see any huge canyons between here and there. So, you know, I spot the bicycle and run the river and bike the shuttle.
And what craft are you in when you're doing that?
Well, that's usually a canoe.
Okay.
I typically use a Mad River ME. It's an old boat, but a fabulous whitewater boat.
Okay, great. And it's are you also by yourself when you're doing that?
Well, sometimes and often with my wife, Anne.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, you know, but it varies a whole lot. But that's rare. I mean, usually I know way more than that about the river. You know, get back to your other question of if somebody says they're just going to go, I say, don't. You need to know something about this place. And I typically try to figure that out. And of course, a lot of information is available now.
Well, and okay, speaking of that, and let's just say, I mean, this isn't a hypothetical. I'm making this my reality. I'm manifesting it now, if you will. I want to run a bunch of the rivers, and especially in Washington. I just moved to Washington, and so I'm like, Washington is the next frontier. What are some of the resources you recommend?
Well, they're good guidebooks for almost everywhere now.
Okay.
You know, Washington has two or three really fine guidebooks for that state. And by the way, one of my next projects is a field guide to Washington rivers. So,
okay, this is like, what's the word, kismet? So when did you explore Washington?
Well, I have been doing it for many years.
Okay, of course, yeah.
I've been trying to do kind of a big expedition up there once a year for the last few years. But once I really start working on that book, you know, there'll be more trips. And my wife, Anne, and I, you know, will be going there for our vacation and that kind of thing.
Okay, well, definitely let me know when you're here.
It'd be great if we could meet up with you there. We could
and continue our tradition of seeing each other on the river.
Exactly. And sharing the shuttle.
Yes, that's key. Okay, so another question I have about you running so many rivers, are they international or domestic?
It's all in the United States and Canada.
Oh, that's amazing.
I've never gone anywhere else. You know, it's a big country.
Yeah.
And while, you know, that sounds really exciting and intriguing in many ways, I just never get beyond what is here. And, you know, there's still a list of stuff I want to do. And
that's amazing.
You know, so, and plus, again, so much of my river running is work related. And so I'm always kind of building on my experience in a way that I can inform other people, rather than just going out and doing kind of exotic stuff, you know?
Right. Okay. So have you ever worked a 9-to-5 job?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, well, it wasn't 9 to 5, but it was a job with a boss, you know, and a paycheck.
Oh, right. The one in Idaho, or you said?
No, well, that was a summer job. I mean, okay. I've had a lot of jobs before I started writing full time, but the main one was for 10 years, I worked as a land use planner, basically an environmental planner.
Okay.
So you're in Pennsylvania.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And okay. I'm just trying to kind of like figure out the whole thing, because I think in my mind, you've done photography forever, but was kind of the switch to, hey, I'm done kind of having that job and now I want to do this.
Yeah. So I was a landscape architecture student. Trout Unlimited hired me to continue a planning project for Pine Creek in northern Pennsylvania, one of the first rivers being studied for the National Wild and Scenic River System.
Oh, cool.
That led to the planning director for that county.
Yeah.
Stepping out of an audience one night and asking me if I wanted a real job. And I said, well, I'm going to actually need a real job. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I worked as an environmental planner at the county level for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And in the process, I was running rivers because I loved rivers.
Uh-huh.
And I started writing up little river trip stories for magazines as a way to kind of justify my otherwise pointless existence paddling down rivers.
Not pointless, but I get where you're coming from.
It's just a joke. It's just a joke. This is the main point of life for us, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that kind of worked, you know. Uh-huh. And then I realized that the main reason we weren't having great success in land use planning was people just didn't believe in the need for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I became interested in writing in a more popular vein.
Okay.
To interest people in places and issues and the dilemmas that we face,
mm-hmm.
the environmental crises that are before us today. And I focused on rivers.
Uh-huh.
So I did trip stories, and then I got a book idea. It's called Rivers of Pennsylvania. It was my first book.
Awesome.
And then the Stanislaus River was being dammed.
Okay. What year was that?
This was 1979 and 80.
Okay.
And this was the most popular whitewater in the West. It's in the Sierra Nevada foothills.
Okay. Yep.
You know, it was a heavily used river and very important in like the history of Western river running.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being the last big dam being built in the United States against any kind of opposition.
Meaning there was no one was against it. Everyone was for it.
Well, no, let me phrase that again.
Okay.
It was the last big dam fight that we lost.
Got it.
And
okay.
So river runners fought against the Friends of the River in California.
Uh-huh.
Fought against this dam as hard as they possibly could. We still lost, but it was the last big dam fight that was lost in America.
Wow.
If this was the turning point in the era of big dam construction, no matter what.
Okay.
And so I thought, oh my gosh, this thing is so historically significant, even if we're going to lose the battle.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy really writing about rivers here. I want to write the story of the Stanislaus.
Right.
So at that point, I quit my planning job.
Okay.
Moved into my van and drove to California and spent a year and a half writing the book about the Stanislaus and just basically never looked back from that point.
Wow. And had you lived in your van before that?
No. Well,
okay.
I'd done a year-long trip.
Okay.
I traveled for a year specifically photographing rivers mm-hmm. that were threatened by dams back then.
Mm-hmm.
All these amazing places that we would never see again.
Yeah.
If they built the dams. And a number of those were built, like a big dam on the Savannah River in Georgia.
Right.
And Stanislaus was the most important of these. And Gathright Dam on the Jackson River in Virginia.
Wow.
And others, you know, across the country were under construction when I photographed the rivers for the very last time.
Okay. And had you, throughout your life, been taking photos, like
No, I mean, I had a camera when I was a kid going to Ohio Pile on the Yucagani.
Yes. Yeah. That's, I love, okay. I love it. That's where my roommate's from. She talks about it all the time. That's amazing. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you should introduce me and then okay. you won't get a word in edgewise because I'm talking about nothing but the Yuc. My ancestors went to the Yucagani in, get this, 1787.
Hold on. Let me do the math. I can't even do the math. Hundreds of years.
So I had relatives there. My family went there when I was even just a baby. Wow. So I kind of grew up seeing the Yuc, and including its very first days of river running in the early 60s. And then once I started writing full time, you know, after the Stanislaw book, actually the first book after that, I went back to write a book about the Yucagani River.
Wow. And that's one of your upcoming projects, right? Is again about the Yucagani.
Yeah, yeah. Not to confuse you, but I wrote that book in 1982.
Okay.
And updated it 2 years ago.
Okay.
And this year, 2025,
uh-huh.
a whole new book about the Yucagani called Watching the River Run, A Photographic Journey Down the Yucagani, is coming out. And that's basically a photo book focusing on the natural history of the Yuc.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's been a big river in my life.
So when you decided, okay, I'm going to quit my job, you really had not lived full. Well, I guess you did a little bit of van life. You didn't do much photography. You wrote a little bit, and then you were like, okay, this is my life now.
Yeah, I'm sort of like those guys who say I'm going to run this river, and I don't know about it. You know,
I think that's so cool.
Yeah, but it worked. You know.
Well, okay, and this was all kind of pre-Google, right? How did you hear about all of the damn things happening, right? Like if you were in Pennsylvania, how did you know about the stuff going on in California?
Well, there was a total network of river lovers and still is.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, dam fights were really the focus of the entire river conservation movement.
Can you kind of define like what a dam fight is?
Yeah, well, a big dam gets proposed on a river that's going to flood out a valley or a canyon.
Okay.
So opposition arises for any number of reasons, you know, from the aesthetic and spiritual to the economic.
Yeah.
We don't want that dam to be built. We have enough dams.
Right.
So people oppose them. And this was the core of the entire river conservation movement back in the late 60s and the 70s.
Okay.
So you know about it, you know, and groups like a guy named Whitewater Boater, Jerry Merrill, started a group called Friends of the River in California.
Okay, I've definitely heard of that group. And I know you mentioned it prior, but yeah.
Sure, sure. And then American Rivers got started as the first and only national group specifically on river conservation. And it was largely because of dam threats on the New River in West Virginia.
Yeah.
The Delaware at Tox Island Dam site in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, you know, the American River in California, on and on and on. You know, there were hundreds of them back then. Mm-hmm. So American Rivers was formed, and I became engaged with it right away.
And
then was on their board of directors for 9 years and so forth.
Wow. Has conservation changed? You know, like what's kind of conservation of today? Is it big dam fights still or?
No, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that have not changed is it's still about the beauty and spirit and love of rivers.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you know, the conflicts with the dams were so graphic and explicit and just, they were the ultimate conflicts because the place was going to totally disappear. It's not like it's going to be polluted or the flow is going to be reduced or, you know, the snail garter is going to go extinct.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the whole place is going to be gone.
Yeah.
So that made for an extremely spirited response in terms of people who loved rivers.
Mm.
And there was just a whole lot of soul in that movement. And we never really thought that we'd totally win the way we did. I mean, it was just dam fight, river by river by river.
Right.
And we lost a lot, and then we started winning them, and then the Stanislaw turned the page, and no more big dams were proposed after
that. Yeah, because the opposition was so big.
Pardon me?
Because the opposition was so big.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And our reasons were so compelling.
Yeah.
And our abilities kind of increased in sophistication.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, all the economic dam sites were built upon. So it was like, you know, just they were just dreaming about building Auburn Dam. You know, it never would have paid its way.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the momentum back there was to still do that. And it would have happened without the movement to stop it.
Mm.
But the economics turned against them also. But back to your question, what this led to was the opportunity to then look at what else is threatening rivers.
Okay.
Water quality issues, big time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, diversion issues where rivers are dried up for whatever reason. You know, mega feedlots came in as a big new pollution issue.
Mm-hmm.
Floodplain development, which still has not matured as a movement, which I thought you'd never ask, is my latest book.
Ooh!
Can you read that, Tate?
Yes. Seek Higher Ground, the Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis.
Yeah, it looks like a mirror for me. But the, yes, so this, so, oh my God. Flood, you're blowing my mind here. Floodplain development is, in my way of thinking, the biggest river issue of all. And it's one of the less recognized.
Yeah, say more. What is it?
Yeah, well, inappropriate development on floodplains is ruining rivers. And it's very uneconomic and disastrous to do that. You
meaning
know,
like if here's a river channel and let's say there's a new development of houses, a new neighborhood in like the flats next to it, if it were to flood. So how does that impact it?
Well, number one, those houses are being built on floodplain, which is the best habitat in the world for wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
So we're losing that habitat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they end up building levees and riprap and all that kind of stuff, you know, which affects the river badly. Then the river floods and you've got all the problem of all the, number one, damaging all those houses and putting all those people at risk, not to mention public safety issues and costs, you know, billions and billions of dollars per year.
Yeah.
So just multiple problems and having a very serious negative effect on rivers. For example, dam removal is a very big thing these days, and that's
wonderful. Right.
And I forecast the dam removal movement back in the 80s, you know, and just we quit building new ones. Then the job became, let's get rid of the worst old ones.
Yeah.
And that's really a good idea. But we will spend millions of dollars getting rid of a dam that opens up, say, 15 miles of river, and that's really a wonderful thing.
Right.
But meanwhile, thousands of miles of riverfront are ruined every year by inappropriate floodplain development.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's why I say this has been an unrealized issue of the river conservation movement. We need to spend more time on that. So that's why I wrote this book.
Okay, so then I'm intrigued. Have conservation groups that you're involved with, like American Rivers or other ones, have you started bringing this to their attention and, you know, what's being done to kind of help it now?
Yeah, well, I've overstated the case because they were working on it.
Okay, great.
You know, but it hasn't been a real big focus of most of the conservation community.
Okay.
And it won't be because it's a really difficult issue. But nonetheless, we need to address it. And that's what my book is all about.
Well, I'm really excited to see over the next year, 5 years, how we can just say right now, Tim Palmer sets the trend for the conservation movement. Mark it time of conservation movement beginning 10:24 a.m.
Hey, I think you're inflating both your program and my books here.
No, Tim, I'm manifesting.
Okay, well, I'm with you.
Okay, great. You know, I think it's been interesting to hear conservation work and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like it is such a blanketed term. And so my question is, you know, for the average Joe, for the like just wanting to get into rivers or the river lover, what are just two or three basic things that they can do to help support the work without having it be like their career?
Yeah, well, you can join an organization. So almost every river has a group these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the big ones do. You know, mm-hmm. there are river keeper organizations and even watershed associations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, let alone, you know, like groups that are specifically river oriented. Almost every river has a group. So uh-huh. you can join an organization because they are already onto this.
Okay.
And you can help them by supporting them, and they can help you by informing you about what needs to be done.
Okay.
So that's one thing.
Okay.
You can learn about your river irrespective of a group that's involved in it by doing some just basic research and mm-hmm. getting informed and going there and seeing the place and talking to people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And learn what the prime issues are affecting. Yes, I'm now writing about North Central Pennsylvania, where acid mine drainage is a very big issue.
You know, okay.
So if you're in a river like that, you know, like say the Sinamahoning River in northern mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, you know, you can explore that issue and find out what's being done and what's mm-hmm. not being done, and engage in these ways. And, okay. you know, you might not be engaging like at the top level of really leading the battle or anything like that, but you can, if there is a battle, you can join it and people can help you to do that from mm-hmm. these organizations. And if there's not a group or a movement to do that, you can start one. Mm. You know, I mean, the world is full of these unsung heroes and heroines who have identified a problem with their stream and said, okay, I'm going to do something about this.
Yeah.
And they engage and they start going to local government meetings and local planning meetings and going to the local environmental agency and saying, why aren't you doing your job here? Mm-hmm. And all that kind of stuff. So one thing leads to another. People can get more and more involved. But join a group, learn about the place, go there and experience it. I mean, that's where so much of it all begins.
Right.
And for you and for me and for everybody, you know, if I hadn't done that crazy trip on the Salmon River when I was 18 years old,
yeah,
you know, who knows where I would be, you know, but I stepped out to experience my river.
Yeah.
Of course, there are amazing opportunities here for river guides. I don't know if many guides listen to your story, your program, but I'll bet they do.
Yeah.
And I mean, river guides are exposed to hundreds of people.
Right.
And they have the opportunity to turn every one of those people onto rivers.
And I think that is like one of the most powerful things of guiding is showing people how amazing it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which is what all of your publications have done. And I think, you know, now that's so helpful. I really appreciate you sharing, you know, easy ways to get into conservation, because I think I find it to be quite daunting, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. So yeah, mm-hmm. that it makes me really excited, and I can't wait to find the group, or, you know, even American Whitewater, or, you know, all the good ones.
And Kate, you got to be ready, because all those clients of yours are going to ask you what they can do. So
yeah, true. I feel like this is kind of a good segue now to get into, you know, you have done over 400 rivers. You like doing big expedition trips. And so I'd love to hear about some memorable expedition trips that you've done, maybe like, I mean, whichever one you want to share, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. So the longest river trip you can do in a place where we'd actually want to do one is in the U.S., south of Canada, is the Salmon River in Idaho.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of people do what we call the River of No Return section of about 80 miles. You know, it's fabulous. A lot of people do the Middle Fork of the Salmon. A lot of people now do the Lower Salmon, where you don't even need a permit. So that's cool. You can just go there.
Right.
But not too many people do the whole thing. And you can put in way upstream, even above Sunbeam Dam.
Okay.
Or below that, which I have done on my big trips, because I had a raft with 40 days of food basically on it.
You didn't restock at all?
Well, we restocked twice.
Okay.
In salmon and in rich.
Okay.
But, you know, that's just fresh food. You know, we carried non-perishables with us.
Okay, that makes sense.
We just got a big backpack full of fresh stuff at each
and
of
us. And was this you and Ann?
Yeah.
Okay, was great.
It Ann and I on the last trip? I've done it twice.
Okay,
twice.
Cool.
I've done this. Three times I've done this long trip. Ann and I twice.
Okay.
And so we put in way up high in the Sawtooth Mountains. And we boated for 42 glorious days, the whole way to Lewiston, Idaho, when you run into the flat water of the first dam on the Snake River.
Wow.
Lower Granite Dam. So
what time of year?
Late summer.
Okay.
Actually, the dates were extremely rigid because, as you know, there's a permit required for the main
scene
at Corn Creek only. That's about halfway.
Okay.
So, and I couldn't get a permit ahead of time just because I couldn't and I didn't plan ahead long enough. Mm-hmm. So I needed to evade the permit system, which I did by appearing at Corn Creek in my boat on September the 7th.
Okay.
The permit season ends.
Oh, epic.
So Corn Creek was that's where most people start their trip.
Yeah, yeah.
That was day 20 of our trip.
Oh, my word.
We had this fabulous 20 days above there, and then it just got way good below there.
Yeah.
And we just kept going and went the whole way, you know, lower Salmon, into the Snake, down the Snake, into the backwater of Lower Granite Dam.
And when you were on the river, or when you and I did a trip, you were in a bucket boat. Were you in a bucket boat for this trip?
Gosh, I wish you'd quit calling it that, Tate.
Tell me what I should call it.
I call it a vintage Avon adventurer.
Okay, yeah. So the VAA, vintage Avon adventurer. Is that what you were in?
No, but that's my raft. I have a shredder now, like an original
epic
Tommy Love shredder from Cottonwoods, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
But my big boat is an Avon adventure bucket boat.
Awesome.
And I love that boat. I mean, knock on wood in, what is this now? I bought it in 1882, the math, you know, 40 some years. I've never had a leak, ever.
Tim, that is dangerous words. I'm glad we both knocked on wood. That just made my heart like stop.
It's a fabulous boat. You know, I totally would have flipped an upset rapid on the Grand Canyon if I were in a self-bailer because I hit it just in exactly the wrong place. And
you go down the left line or what did you do at upset?
I ended up going right through the upset hole.
Yeah.
Because the hole above that surfed me into it.
Uh-huh.
And if I hadn't filled up with water like that,
uh-huh,
I would have flipped for sure.
Wow. Have you flipped? This is another knock on wood moment. Have you flipped?
Oh God, let me
the
knock
VAA?
On. Never. I've never flipped the boat. Not yet.
My eyes are wide as saucers. Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Not yet.
So for this summer, do you have trips planned with
the
vintage Avon Adventurer?
Yeah. Annie and I. Well, actually, we love now to take the Avon Adventure, which Anne rows and I row my little shredder.
Oh, fun.
Which is, as one gnarly old river guide on the road told me at takeout, he says, oh my God, an original shredder. That is like the ultimate river sports car in the world with oars.
I mean, and you're talking about like the neoprene fabric black shredder.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
The shredder was actually invented by Tommy Love in Ohio Pile, Pennsylvania, on the yacht in the late 80s, and he perfected the design after that. And I got mine for Tommy died, but his people run his company now, and I actually bought it. So it's an original shredder from the Tommy Love factory.
Awesome.
So I love that boat.
Yeah.
Both of them. But Ann and I take actually the two rafts now on. And to answer your question, the Klamath is our river again this year.
Oh, yeah.
We've done two long Klamath trips, which is fabulous.
Pre-dams or post-dams?
Pre-dam.
Okay.
And now it's post-dam, so we can put in a little bit higher now.
Nice. Are you going to do source to sea?
Well, we did, but we will. But you kind of have to carry around Ishi-Pishi Falls.
Okay, yep.
And that's a motor portage, and we'll probably get out above that this time just to keep the shuttle simple. And that alone will probably be a 10-day trip for us. So
fun.
So that's the plan for this year.
As you mentioned that you had done, 530 miles through Yellowstone.
Well, on the Yellowstone River.
Oh, on the Yellowstone River.
Yeah,
does that run through?
I'm sorry?
What states does that run through?
Montana.
Oh, okay, Montana.
You basically go the whole way across Montana.
Did you have any run-ins with animals, or have you, on your adventures, like in Alaska and stuff like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, not there. I mean, it was not in the park.
Okay.
Below that, you're not allowed to boat in the park.
Okay.
Which to me is okay. But I put in below the park, and then in a canoe. So it was all basically big volume class 2 water.
Uh-huh.
For 530 miles into the Missouri River.
Oh, in, wow.
In okay. North Dakota.
Yeah.
So fabulous trip, you know, beautiful campsites on these cottonwood gravel bars like every night. And, you know, so it was great. But animals, you know, grizzly bears have been an issue in Alaska.
Yeah.
But never a catastrophe. You know, they have come into camp where I've made a lot of noise to try to chase them away and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But no, mice have been a bigger problem chewing through my dry bags.
Of course. Okay. Yeah. That's a good, what is the dry bag of choice for you? What's your go-to?
Well, I get Northwest River Supply dry bags
and,
you know, and they've worked just fine for me.
Well, perfect.
Yeah.
With multi-day river trips, I feel like there's so many aspects of it. And, you know, my favorite part of it is like holding my morning coffee. That's like, there's nothing I love more than like waking up, getting out of my sleeping bag, and then holding a warm coffee.
I want to go on your trip, Kate.
Yeah, I'll make you coffee.
I know you will. Yeah. I know that it has happened.
Okay, yeah, actually, great point. Do you have like a favorite part of a multi-day trip? Like,
oh man.
What part of the routine?
Yeah, you know, being there is the main thing. I mean, the water is great and the travel is great, and just seeing a new scene unfold at every mm-hmm. bend and exploring someplace new is fabulous. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the whole package of not just traveling there, but living there, what the really big thing is for me. And so, yeah, there's nothing I like more than to finish a day on the river and just be sitting, looking at that current flowing by, mm-hmm. the sun sets, mm-hmm. and the sky darkens, and stars
yes.
begin to pop out in the sky.
Yes.
You know, and then go to bed and do it all again the next day.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the way of life mm-hmm. on a river that really makes me excited and makes me feel like I belong there and makes me so passionate about rivers and protecting the beauty and the spirit and the life of them.
That almost like makes me tear up, because I like, even you just describing like night falling, that moment where you can see the silhouette of the trees on the ridgeline and the yeah. sky turns purple. Every night, you can ask any of my co-guides, every night I'll go, oh, it's my favorite time of the night. And I just think that sense of belonging is something that I hope everyone gets to feel with whatever they choose to be passionate about. And for me yeah. and for you and for a lot of river people, I feel like that way of life and the way that like the current just calls is so cool. And it's interesting because I feel like my life now is not as many multi-day trips, which, you know, that way of life, that long expedition, that like time with friends, that's so special, but it's now mostly day trips. And it's been interesting because in a way it seems like it would be harder to get that sense of belonging on a day trip. But, you know, experiencing the currents and like reading water for me has really shifted. And that's kind of when I get that sense of belonging, is when I read the water.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, you know, when you are going on rivers, just a day trip, what is it for you that gives that sense of belonging? Is it the nature? Is it reading, you know, does that? Because a day trip's different than the multi-day yeah. expedition that you do.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's really the same package, you know, it's the same qualities, as you say, and you don't get the overnight experience and you don't get the feeling of belonging there for a long time and really forgetting about the rest of the world. That's a big part of it too. You don't get that, but you can certainly get river magic every day.
Yeah.
River, as you say. And to me, I mean, the other magic moment for me is kicking off from shore. And you realize there's this miracle of floating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The boat actually floats. And here we are sitting in it, and the world starts to go by, you know, and a new world comes into view.
Yeah.
And of course, it's all so beautiful. And it's all so exciting because you're never sure what's coming up. Mm. So just all of those things really appeal to me and make me feel like I belong there and passionate about the place. I love rapids too.
Yeah.
But, you know, the challenge of the rapid is not the main thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole package of being there and belonging to the place.
Yeah.
That really fills me up and rewards me in so many ways.
I think it's really beautiful the way that you're able to capture that in your books. You know, the book that I have, you do so many long exposure shots where you can really capture the movement of the water, which is a huge draw. And so thank you for taking those amazing photos. It's amazing. I think just to kind of wrap up today, I'd love to hear if you want to just give a little shout out for what upcoming projects we can look out for and where we can find them.
Oh, yeah. So so the Flood book, you know, I'm doing programs with. So that's kind of still a focus. And my new Yawk book is coming out in April, which is
okay.
I have 140 glorious photos of the Yaqagani. And the goal there, you know, the Yaqagani is an extremely popular river, and so people get the recreation part, but too often they don't get the nature part. You know, the reason is it's such a great recreational river is really the nature of the place and the remaining wildness to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really tried to weave all of that together to a better understanding of this place and why it is important and how it functions and how it excels in its beauty and its artwork. So I've tried to make that connection there through photography and the text. And I'm now working on a book about my old, I've been in Oregon for 22 years and for 40, but my old home is Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And the north central part of Pennsylvania is this fabulous semi-wild area that's half public land. It's half state forest.
Okay.
Very much like the Adirondack Park in New York.
Okay.
Only virtually unrecognized and therefore kind of unappreciated in a way. And I'm doing a book about that to bring more attention to the need to protect that place and this amazing system of seven different wonderful rivers that flow through it. All part of the West Branch Susquehanna
basin. Okay, great. And so then have you've been traveling there. Are you going to travel back to get any, or like, are you've already gotten all the stuff?
I'll go there for like a few weeks at a time.
Okay, great.
One season or another to get the photos I need. And
all of your books, do we find them on your website or do we find them on Amazon?
Yeah, well, both. You can look at my website, timpalmer.org.
TimPalmer.org. Okay.
Yeah, the books are all there. And, you know, Amazon carries many of them. Your local bookstore can, of course, order any of them. And let me mention, too, now that you asked me, I do field guides.
Oh, too. Great.
Field guide. You know, there are a lot of boating guides and fishing guides, but they're, they're no guides to actually the rivers themselves.
Okay.
Focusing on natural history.
Yeah.
And everything that's there to see and learn with all the tips you need to hike or to boat. So
field I have a field guide to Oregon rivers.
I have a field guide to California rivers, a field guide to rivers of the Rocky Mountains.
Wow.
And coming up, a field guide to Washington rivers. And that's when Ann and I will meet you in Washington.
Yes. Okay. I can't wait.
And here's the other thing. This is my big volume, America's Great River Journeys.
Wow.
So I
what is that cover picture?
That's the Snake River in Grand Teton National Park.
Oh my gosh, it's gorgeous.
So it's a massive book of photos and text about 50 great canoe and raft and kayak journeys nationwide.
Wow.
So some of your people might be interested in any of those.
Well, I'm going to check them all out. Those look amazing. And I can't thank you enough for just like sharing your passion for the river and just giving us like easy ways that we can be involved and you're just a delight to talk to. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Likewise, Kate, thank you for including me. It's always a pleasure to see you on the river or not.
Yeah. All right. Well, you have a wonderful day, and we'll go ahead and end the stream.
You too, Tate. Yeah. Thank you, Tate.
Thank you.